CITR Radio would like to remind you that this program is a three-dimensional color presentation. For quality sound and vivid imagery, please use your CITR 3D earplugs.
Hello, listeners. This is CITR Doc Season 2. We are broadcasting from the ancestral and unceded territory, the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. If this is the first doc you're hearing from us, last year we kicked off a documentary series encompassing various perspectives on UBC's history in light of the institution's centennial. This year, we are blowing it up to encompass community itself as a concept and all the various ways community can be interpreted. So if you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher currently, please subscribe to keep up with our releases. Two a week, Mondays and Wednesdays, until June 19th. Coming up now, we've got a documentary from Nick Panu, who's been working with various community stations around the Lower Mainland for many years now. So a while ago, Nick came into our office with a big list of ideas: gentrification around Crab Park, airplane traffic in Vancouver, a whole list of ideas. For him, being a casual stand-up comedian, the topic we settled on was something close to home. As Nick mentions, the recent death of Robin Williams catalyzed a conversation about the lack of discussion around histories of depression in the stand-up community. Expanding that scope, the stand-up community in Vancouver, vibrant as it is something that CITR has never quite dedicated energy to covering, despite our occupying very close traveling grounds. So in that sense, programs like Finding the Funny, which is currently on CITR, and docs like Nick's help bridge that gap. Stay tuned. This is Comedy and Catharsis.
And Dave, the driving test comes, driving instructor gets in. He says, "I just want you to drive like you normally would." So I said, "Okay," and I put on my ski mask, punched him out, and robbed him.
You never see that kind of racial and discrimination in countries that are like the same, you know, like in Japan, for example. You don't see people in Japan going, "Oh, screw Tokyo, man. Hiroshima is the bomb." Oh, too soon. Come on.
I'm Nick Panu, and I will be hosting, narrating, this documentary for CITR 101.9 FM, where I explore the relationship between depression, mental health, and performing stand-up comedy. Famous comedians have come out in the past, such as Lenny Bruce, Roger Dangerfield, George Carlin, and Richard Pryor. And recently, in 2014, the tragic death of Robin Williams, who suffered from depression. Is comedy cathartic? Does it resolve depression? What is it about being on stage? Is there some fix? Some high? So I pose this question to local stand-up comedians Nick Roy, Mark Hughes, and Margot Prentice.
Like it's natural endorphins. You know, when you do good, you get this rush. You know, you feel like you're on top of the world, you know what I mean? And there's like not a drug in the world that can replace that feeling.
It's like, I guess what people feel when they jump out of a plane or something like that, it's the same thing.
I just have fun, and having fun is in itself helps endorphins. And I'm in chronic pain with rheumatoid arthritis. When I get up on the stage or when I know I'm performing, I have no pain, and I'm good for a couple of days. Just the high of being on stage and having a live audience, and that's what comedy does.
There is an endorphin rush, a high, a buzz, when you're on stage. I experienced this recently when I performed stand-up comedy at a local amateur competition.
Coming to stage is Nick. Please give him a warm round of applause.
Yeah, I just came from the beach. I should remember to wear my matching socks. I love the city.
Was it just endorphins? What else is it about comedy? What other things are there that helps these artists get through their depression? So I pose the question to local stand-up comedians Margot Prentice and Patricia Morrison.
Well, writing, I've been writing for a long time, and I have a really wicked past, And the writing was a cathartic for me. Somebody told me, well, it's you have the scars, but when you write about it, you remove the scars. Right now, I'm a full-time caretaker to my husband who has dementia, congestive heart failure. He's very, very ill. But some of the things he says, I can put in my routine, and not just to a senior audience, because there is funny in everything in life. There's a sad side and a happy side. Like, you know, like there's going to be a day when he's not going to recognize me. Like, are you my wife? And I'll say, yes. And he'll say, good, you're a pretty one. I know this is going to happen. And when I perform in front of people that are dealing with this, they come to me and they have somebody to relate to. They're going through this as well. One of my favorite comedians, Katrina, had cancer. And she talks about it and it makes you laugh. And she's wonderful, and other people can relate to, you know, this is not funny, but some things are funny. And when you're sick, there's always a funny side of life. Always. And that is part of being mentally healthy. If you can see things, not at the bottom, but just bring it up and bring it a little happy.
The same sentiment was shared by comedian Patricia Morrison, who was diagnosed 4 years ago with bipolar disorder, panic disorder, and anxiety disorder, and stand-up comedy helped her cope with her mental illnesses.
Actually, it was about 4 years ago. With bipolar disorder, agoraphobia, panic disorder, anxiety disorder, so a bunch of things, and suicide ideation, which means I think about killing myself every 6 seconds, so that's always fun. And when I had those diagnoses, it was just like a piece of the puzzle I never knew existed. And I found it really helped to be writing about it and talking about it and bringing awareness to these issues. Like, I make a lot of suicide jokes and I make a lot of mental illness jokes at my own expense most of the time. But more often than not, I have people with other mental illnesses or who've had sexual assaults in the past and stuff like that come up and go, wow, I've never been able to laugh at that before. And I found it really healing. And I get lots of hugs and lots of love from other people who are suffering. And they're like, I'm never able to talk about this. And it was nice to laugh about it for once.
But Patricia elaborates further and is very adamant. It's not the writing process for comedy itself, but it's having the comedy relatable, relating to the audience, that actually makes it healing.
Like, writing it down was very cathartic and it was healing, but knowing that I was going to share that with people kind of ramped me up to write better, you know, like to find what's funny. And so knowing that I was going to share it, I think was more healing initially than just writing about it. Because writing about it can be like a secret diary thing. And sure, it's cathartic, but it's the sharing part where you're like, oh my God, like it's terrifying, but also when you get the feedback of like, holy, you helped me connect where I couldn't connect before, that was pretty impressive. Yeah, like I had one person who, one of the first times that I ever did my molestation jokes, came up to me and was like, you know, I've heard other comedians, like famous comedians, try and do material like that, and I've never been able to laugh at it. And he admitted to me, he was like, hey, I was molested when I was a kid too. I've never been able to laugh at it. He goes, I had to walk out of the club, and this is a person who, I'm not going to say, but anyways, he was a person who's been around the block quite a few times kind of thing. And he was like, I had to walk out of the club because I was laughing so hard. Like, you nailed it on the head and you made it funny and it was relatable and sad at the same time. So that made me feel like, holy, maybe I'm onto something. And as cathartic as it was for me on stage, hearing that it helped him in some way, and then the other people who came up to me after that show that night, I had one girl who came, she's like, can I buy you a drink? And like, she admitted all of the suicide stuff to me. And I was just like, wow. And she was just like, oh my God, like this helped me hold on for a little longer because I've never been able to talk about this to anybody. And I was like, well, you know, coming from my background where I went to become a healer, you know, teaching yoga and stuff like that, I found this more healing than any of the yoga that I'd ever taught in my life. So I thought that was pretty cool because nobody's talking about this stuff. You know, very few people are in a way that's relatable or helpful for other people.
But as cathartic as it is for the comedian to have the audience relating to their performance and the issues they're presenting, there's a catch-22.
You know, when you do good, you get this rush, you feel like you're on top of the world, you know what I mean? And there's like not a drug in the world that can replace that feeling of like, wow, I just like hit a home run, you know what I mean? That feeling. So, and I guess that in itself is a drug, and comedians like that, and they want to keep do that over and over. I want to keep hitting the home run, but sometimes not necessarily that happens. And then you know, like sometimes you strike out.
How does that affect the comedian's overall mental health and well-being when the audience doesn't relate, they don't connect with the issues that are being presented, very personal issues, and in fact, they challenge those issues and object to them?
Yeah, sometimes there's endorphin rushes when you're on stage, when you're doing well and people get it. And then there's other times where I've told these same things and everybody's just with their arms crossed, like, I hate your face. Like, they just hate you. Or maybe they feel so sorry for you that they don't want to show anything. They don't want to let that vulnerability in. And I've had to find that line between where is it funny and where is it too sad. And I think that there's times where I've left the stage devastated and I felt like I just showed the whole world my dirty laundry and they were like, that you're a disgusting person. And I felt the same way as when I was a little kid where I was telling what happened to me and I felt ashamed, and that's what I felt on stage. But you still feel like that. When people don't relate, it can be as traumatizing as when people do relate and you get the endorphin rush. So I feel like it's big highs and big lows with comedy and sharing that kind of stuff that isn't mainstream.
Said, yeah, I can really relate to that. And yeah, you sort of told some of my story and I can understand some of that. But I've also had people say you shouldn't talk about that stuff. It's hard for us to hear. Oh, everything. You name it. I've had that experience, right? So which one's right and which one's wrong, right? My life makes some people uncomfortable. I was telling you in the coffee shop before you turned the recorder on that some people want to pretend that people who lived with my life don't exist because their lives are very comfortable and they want to just be like, no, that, because acknowledging that there's hardcore drug addicts and people who steal to support their habits and survivors of sexual abuse, sometimes if you acknowledge that, then you have to admit that maybe you have to maybe not do something about it, but not ignore it, right? Mm.
Yes, comedy can be cathartic. There's an endorphin rush. When you're on stage, there is no buzz, no feeling like that. When the crowd connects with you, with what you're presenting, and with you as a person. But what if they don't? A joke bombs. Your joke doesn't get over, and they don't connect with your material. Then it's not so healing. It isn't cathartic. It doesn't help. So comedy is like a temporary fix. If you're having issues, if you suffer from depression or mental health issues, it's something you can't rely on exclusively. Otherwise, you're always chasing the fix, the high, the endorphin rush, when the audience really digs what you're doing on stage, the roar of the crowd. Because when it's gone, you're still suffering, and you might be suffering even more. This has been a documentary for CITR 101.9 FM, exploring the relationship between depression, overall mental health, and stand-up comedy.
That was Comedy and Catharsis by Nick Panu. If you're listening to this now, make sure you subscribe to CITR Docs on Stitcher and iTunes. That way you can get new releases as they come in over the next few weeks. You can also find our past CITR Doc Season 2 releases on Stitcher and iTunes. Thank you to Nick for that piece. Thank you to CRFC Radio Meters for partial funding for this project. And be sure to go to citr.ca/docs if you want to find out more about the producers and the various documentaries that we have been releasing. Until then, here is a preview of our next upcoming documentary. It's from Sydney Soldan. It's called Activists of Academia. Stay tuned.
This fickle relationship with activism that I alluded to earlier seems to be most prominent in the wake of a tragic or controversial event. And then things quiet down and activism stays out of the spotlight for a couple years, until the next attack or controversy. Alex Murky was another student who was not shy about voicing her opinion. During her undergrad as a political science major, she co-founded the Talon, UBC's left-wing activist alternative to other, more traditional UBC press.
I thought about this a lot when I was on campus because, I mean, I hadn't really heard anything about the history of campus activism until I got involved in like local politics, and I ended up meeting some people who had been involved at UBC, and I found out that they did all this really interesting stuff that I had never heard about. And so I think it's super easy to go through your 4 years or however many years at UBC and just think that there's just no activism going on whatsoever and that there never has been, because for whatever reason, there's not really a culture of people thinking about the campus in that way.